One nation divided today on the world. I'm Marco Werman. Donald Trump's victory leaves half the nation cheering and half the nation crying, and both sides not knowing each other at all.
There's a small handful of people that voted for Trump. We're just in this bubble of not hatred, I guess you could say.
Plus, what one Nigerian expects now from President-elect Trump.
He's won the elections. The reality show is over. So I'm expecting to see a different Donald Trump than the offensive, the Trump who just wants to give us a good show.
And a young activist on why climate change should be at the top of Trump's presidential agenda.
You might not be affected by climate change. You might not even see the impacts in your daily life. But trust me, millions are dying every year because of this. So please think.
The day after today here on The World. I'm Marco Werman. This is The World.
Donald J. Trump.
Donald Trump, 70 ans, le président anti-système.
A clip from French TV today trying to explain to a French audience who Donald Trump really is. Trump's shocker of an election victory last night is the talk of the planet today. Seems like everyone around the globe who is watching our presidential campaign with puzzlement from afar is now trying to understand how we got here. And yesterday's vote revealed a deeply divided America. That's something President Obama tipped to earlier today.
A lot of our fellow Americans are exultant today. A lot of Americans are less so. But that's the nature of campaigns. That's the nature of democracy. It is hard.
So where do we go from here? For starters, Obama invited President-elect Trump to the White House on Thursday and defeated Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton today, urged her supporters to look to the future.
Let us not grow weary. Let us not lose heart. For there are more seasons to come, and there is more work to do.
Our work on The World today begins with a closer look at a key demographic this year, Latinos. We said many times, and were reminded again yesterday, that the Latino vote is not by any means monolithic. Rupa Shenoy is the host of our podcast, Otherhood. And yesterday, Rupa, we spoke about the Republican Latino vote, where you are in San Antonio, got a real sense of how complex the Latino vote is. And we're going to hear from a Latino who voted for Trump in a moment. But you've been out there in San Antonio talking with the other side about their feelings now that we know Donald Trump will be president. Who have you been speaking with and what are they telling you?
Today, I've mainly been talking to people of color, minorities, who were Clinton supporters. And they're in shock. For some, that's mute, dazed shock. For others, that's panicked shock. Some are shocked that they didn't even know Trump support was so widespread because they haven't seen that support. Even the people living in San Antonio, which as a city went blue, but the state went red. This is Kat Carey, a Latina mom of a five-year-old.
Being in San Antonio, Texas, you say Texas to people that aren't from Texas, and you think, you know, Republican country. But our city is a Democratic city, and I live in a bubble. So it was also shocking because everyone I know, there's a small handful of people that voted for Trump. But, like, everyone else I know, I mean, and I don't really know my neighbors. But as far as my friends, my family that I am with 90% of the time, and my daughter's school, everybody, we're just in this bubble of, you know, of not hatred, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so that bubble of non-hatred that Kat Carey is referring to there, obviously some of the hateful things that Donald Trump said on the campaign trail.
Right. What she didn't say there is both of her neighbors have Trump signs in their yard. So they see it, but they don't interact with it. And that's enough to feel apart from it and not know how big it is, apparently, that they're discovering. This is the big realization of today. And so everyone has their own rationalization theory of what happened. And many people think that it was minorities voting for Trump that tipped it his way. So there's frustration there within minorities. There's a growing dynamic of the two ideologies within people of color. But, I mean, overall, the general sense is depression. They're sad. They're disillusioned. And they feel like Trump's win is a rejection of multiculturalism in this country.
It was interesting to hear Kat Carey's voice getting kind of quiet talking about the Trump supporters. Not really sure who they are. What about her safety and people who kind of feel like her? Do they feel safe?
There's a baseline tension here because it's an open carry state. And there's people who live here are used to that. They're used to that dynamic, but they still feel the shock of seeing a gun. But I just came from talking with the mayor, actually, and that's what I asked her. Her name is Ivy Taylor. She's an independent, and she's the first African-American mayor, which she says a lot about San Antonio. But she's not sure how to heal these divisions and make people feel safe coming out of this election.
Well, I've really just been thinking about how we can stay focused on local issues. I really don't know how to broach the conversations, you know, around the national issues, because I think folks get pretty emotional and have staked out positions. So I try to just focus on the things that I know bring us together.
So, Rupa, where do those Clinton supporters go from here?
Yeah, I want to end on a hopeful note, because we should recognize that this election season has been an opportunity for many new young leaders to step up, get trained, get connected, and try out their organizing skills. They're not surprised by this outcome, maybe because they live in Texas, and they're just ready to keep fighting. This is Denise Hernandez, a millennial activist.
The work we're doing is getting places, and we are being heard. And it's not that we're being heard because they want to listen to us. It's because we're forcing ourselves in the conversation, and we're saying, you're going to listen to us, because this is, again, our country. I feel really powerfully about that, and I've been trying to get more millennials to feel the same way, and I think in some small capacity in San Antonio, I have.
So the basic message is that they're ready to fight.
The world's Rupa Shenoy, host of our podcast, Otherhood. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you.
I don't think you can say that Latinos who voted Republican necessarily handed Donald Trump the White House. It was the strength of Trump's support among white voters that made the biggest difference yesterday. Still, we wanted to hear directly from a Latino Trump supporter to better understand what the appeal was really all about. Milton Sanchez voted for Trump. He's originally from Colombia, but now lives in Washington, D.C.
I'm happy that Donald Trump won. Interested to see what's going to do. And, of course, interested that he's going to follow everything that he promised. Also happy that it was not just him, but the whole Republican Party.
Yeah, and as to those Trump promises, what were they and why did you vote for him specifically?
One of the most important for me was the values, the conservative values of the Republican Party. No pro-choice, no pro-abortion, family, immigration, and also the economy and security.
What about the negative comments Donald Trump made about immigrants? Did those bother you?
I think that he talks too much, and at the beginning he was not being very coherent. But I think that as well as Obama promised during 8 years to do something, and he didn't do anything, as well as Hillary promising to do something for the immigrants, I believe that it's not easy for him just to put all the immigrants, illegal immigrants, tomorrow in a plane and send them back. I think that this is a process, and I don't think that it's going to be that easy for him either. I think that he has to focus more in economy and other issues more than immigration.
What do you hope that Donald Trump delivers to you, Milton, that President Obama has not?
First, that he supports the Republican Party. But also something that was critical, the values, traditional values of the family. Pro-abortion is something that I saw in Hillary Clinton that I totally disagree. And I think that Trump was aligned or agree with the traditional values of the family, church. And I think that was one of the main reasons to vote for Trump.
There were a lot of Latinos who voted for Hillary Clinton, though. Did you ever find yourself having to defend your support of Trump to other Latinos?
Oh, all the time. Actually, people think that because you are Latino, you have to be supporter of Hillary Clinton. And I think that that's a big lie, that the media had an influence, because the traditions of the Latino family are more aligned with the Republican Party. And one example of that is because the immigrants understand what it is to be in a country where progressive socialism works, and we know that that's not the option. And I think that people that vote for Hillary, of course, many of them didn't have other options. Maybe they were not as conservative like I am, but of course they make their choice. I made mine, and we won.
Milton Sanchez, originally from Colombia, now living in the nation's capital. He cast his vote for Donald Trump. Milton, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Building a wall has been one of the big promises made by President-elect Trump. For many people who live along the border, as I found out recently when I went down there, it's an important issue, an existential issue even. But the idea of the wall, if you go to the German capital, Berlin, also brings a whole lot of other kinds of emotions for people there, especially today. November 9th is the anniversary of the start of the day the Berlin Wall came down. People celebrated. There were even concerts at the wall, if you'll recall. Even a strange performance by someone Germans love, David Hasselhoff of Baywatch. Yes, 1989 was quite the year, but then again, 2016 is also quite the year. This made us wonder how Berliners are reacting to the news of our election. For that, we go to the world's Daniel Gross in Berlin. What's it like today there, Daniel? What do you hear on the radio? What are people telling you?
Well, it's a gray day in Berlin, cloudy and cold, and I think that accurately describes the mood of many of the Germans I've been meeting here. The German newspapers have been reporting on the election, of course, and some of them seem relieved that it's over, but virtually all of them are quite critical of Trump. On the radio this morning, the David Bowie song "This Is Not America" played, and quite a few Germans have been talking about disappointment and surprise, and they've been recalling Brexit, which also came. The news came in the morning, and it was sort of they went to sleep with one expectation and woke up with all of that kind of overturned.
I mean, Germans have their own populist movements afoot. Is it disbelief that what's happening in America combined with a fear that maybe what happened here with Donald Trump could be duplicated in Germany?
I think there is a recognition that there's a parallel between the right wing in Germany and the right wing in the United States. But I think mostly this is an election that Germany has followed very closely as one of the closest allies to the U.S. in Europe. And of course, Germany and the U.S. work very closely together. And so there's huge implications for the future of the EU. And Germans just got very invested, most of them supporting Hillary Clinton.
So, Daniel, let's talk about that wall, because Donald Trump has talked a lot about building a wall on the U.S. southern border with Mexico. Obviously, a lot of different reasons for why he would like it there. But basically, it's to separate people. Have people in Berlin heard about the plan? And what do they think about it?
People in Berlin definitely associate Trump with the wall, among other things, with his plan to build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. I think the parallel between the Berlin Wall and the U.S.-Mexico Wall isn't especially strong in a historical sense, but in a symbolic sense, it really does have a lot of meaning here. The idea of a wall in Berlin is a symbol of the division within a society, and Trump is viewed here as a candidate who represents disunity. And in fact, one of the newspapers today ran the headline, "The Disunited States of America." That would be the rough translation.
A lot of people are surprised by the result, Daniel. What has it been like experiencing this from afar?
It's been strange. It's been a very strange day. The news came in while I was waking up and while a lot of people in the United States were going to sleep. And so many of the Americans here have been gathering around, chatting amongst themselves, some of them in disbelief. There's been a lot of commiseration between the Germans and the Americans who happen to support Hillary Clinton. Everyone's been following the news incredibly closely.
The World's Daniel Gross in Berlin. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Marco.
What will President Trump mean for climate change? That's coming up here on The World. I'm Marco Werman with The World. The election of Donald Trump as president of the United States stunned the nation last night. But I don't think there's a country on earth today where people aren't scratching their heads about this one. They were watching this vote closely in Indonesia, for example, where many are worried about the impact a Trump presidency could have on that part of Asia. Joining me now on the line from Indonesia is The World's Carolyn Beeler. She's at the center of the big island of Borneo. So what is the reaction in Indonesia today, Carolyn?
Marco, it's shock and surprise and some confusion. A lot of people here are quite puzzled about the results of the election, which came in this afternoon here in Indonesia. People are asking me sort of what happened? Why did Trump win? And it's sort of interesting here because people here loved Obama so much. You know, he spent some time here as a kid, and he sort of represented this new face of America to Indonesians. And now people kind of see this Trump election as sort of a shift in totally the opposite direction.
Yeah, elaborate a bit on that shift, because Obama, having spent some time in Indonesia as a kid, really comes across, especially when you read his memoir, as, you know, a man of the world. What is or has been the view of Donald Trump in Indonesia?
Well, Marco, Indonesia is the world's largest Muslim country, so Trump's anti-Muslim comments obviously have not gone over well here. Some people are concerned about whether it's going to be harder to visit the U.S., but also at the front of people's minds really is world peace. A couple of people actually said they were worried that President Trump might sort of land the world in a really big conflict because of what they see as sort of his arrogance. And then another concern is also the economy, in terms of Asia's economy, with Trump's protectionist economic views.
Did you hear any surprising comments from Indonesians, either pro or con Donald Trump?
Well, I was a little surprised by exactly just how much people were following this. I mean, I'm in a very rural area, a very small town, and about half the people I spoke to were aware of the American election and had opinions on it. Nobody that I spoke to sounded excited about a President Trump. A lot of people here know Hillary because she's been here before for State Department visits. You know, the Clinton Foundation is active here. So I was surprised by just how many people actually did have a reaction.
You know, the other thing that's really interesting, Carolyn, I mean, you follow the climate change debate quite a bit, and Indonesia is one of those countries, one of those literal countries where there's a lot of water and there's a threat of rising seas. Is that on Indonesians' minds?
Yeah, I think Trump's stance on climate change and his denial of man-made climate change is a factor here. I was actually spending some time today and yesterday in a remote village with an entrepreneur who's starting a giant forest protection business, basically. And the idea is that he's going to be selling carbon credits to protect a bunch of peat forest here. And he was waiting till the moment on the boat when we had cell service to check the election results, because with the President Trump, the future of the business of carbon selling and trading is a lot less certain than it would have been with a President Clinton. So I think that's just one example of how a president who hasn't been in politics and has less solidified policies set forward is really raising a lot of questions here in this country about a lot of different things.
The World's Carolyn Beeler taking the post-vote pulse in Indonesia, even in the remotest part of Borneo. They've been following this election. Carolyn, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Marco.
Interesting what Carolyn said there about climate change, because that's a topic that's barely shown up in the discussion here in the U.S. on this day after the election. Barely a mention during the campaign itself. But once Donald Trump gets to the White House, he could have far-reaching effects on the world's efforts to address the climate crisis. The new global climate agreement just went into effect last week, and soon we'll have a U.S. president who has repeatedly claimed that climate change is a hoax. Our environment editor, Peter Thompson's been following this closely, of course. So thousands of people in Morocco right now, Peter, starting to figure out how to make that new global climate agreement actually work now that it's in effect. What does this change in the White House mean for that process?
Well, it's almost certainly going to get a lot harder. That Paris Agreement hammered out last year was the result of excruciating negotiations that went on literally for decades, even as the actual climate crisis really picked up steam. It only finally happened through some extremely heavy lifting from the Obama administration and the president himself. But now, of course, Obama will be succeeded by a man who has promised to pull the U.S. out of that agreement.
Okay, so practically, can Donald Trump do that? I mean, the deal's gone into effect. The U.S. has signed on.
Yeah, and there is a built-in lag time for any country that actually wants to pull out. So it could be several years before a Trump administration could extricate itself. But meanwhile, the U.S. can basically refuse to engage. It can stay away from meetings. It can not file the required plans and targets for cutting emissions. Most importantly, perhaps, it can refuse to contribute its share of the money that's going to be needed to really make the agreement work, especially when it comes to helping the world's poorest and most vulnerable countries deal with these impacts of climate change. And that's causing real concern among the folks at the meeting in Morocco right now. Our folks over there spoke with a number of those people today. Here's what one of them had to say. His name is Li Xiu. He's an activist based in China.
We are indeed concerned. What happened in Washington doesn't stay in Washington. I think it will have profound implication to U.S.-China relationship. And again, climate change is now a geopolitical issue in the most important bilateral relationships in the world.
So remind us, Peter, we know Donald Trump thinks climate change is a hoax, but why is he so opposed to this treaty, do you think?
Well, there's that basic idea. He thinks it's a hoax that was created by China to make money for China.
So back to the climate change summit in Morocco right now. What's the rest of the world saying?
Well, I was struck by this comment. It's from an 18-year-old woman from Sudan. Her name is Lina Yassin. She's attending the conference as a youth observer. This is what she says that she would like to say to Donald Trump today.
Try to think before you make any decision, because a lot of lives are relying on this. I mean, you might not be affected by climate change. You might not even see the impacts in your daily life. But trust me, millions are dying every year because of this. So please think.
Wow, that's powerful. We've got to remember that the Paris Accord isn't the only big climate initiative that President Trump could weaken.
Yeah. I mean, President Obama has instituted a whole range of programs and policies to try to sort of chip away at our carbon emissions. The biggest one, of course, is the Clean Power Plan, which would require power plants to significantly lower their emissions, which would in effect mean the end of many coal-fired power plants in the U.S. That's one of the things that really incensed many of the people who are Trump's strongest supporters. The plan's been held up in court. It'll almost certainly end up in the Supreme Court. And, of course, there's a vacancy there which Donald Trump will now get to fill and which could be the decisive vote. He also could just pull the plug on the plan entirely.
And, of course, Donald Trump has also famously promised to revive the coal industry here in the U.S., which has been in steep decline. And even China's getting off coal now.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That may not be possible, whatever Trump does. I mean, coal is declining for a whole lot of reasons, even without the Clean Power Plan. One is just the flood of cheap natural gas onto the market, a lot of it coming from here in the U.S. Renewables are also surging around the world, and the pressure of climate change is forcing countries everywhere to find alternatives to coal. So the world is really already pivoting away from coal, and it's pretty likely that most of those coal jobs just aren't coming back. Actually, Marco, if President Trump really wants to try to bring back good energy jobs, one of the biggest growth areas right now isn't old fossil fuels, but new green energy.
The World's Environment Editor, Peter Thompson, thank you as always.
Thanks, Marco.
The World is brought to you by PRI with help from TIAA. Whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is dedicated to helping those who teach, heal, and serve others achieve a lifetime of financial well-being. More at TIAA.org.
I'm Marco Werman. What's a Trump presidency going to look like?
Nobody knows.
But everyone thinks they do. And that's a problem, says Trevor Noah, host of The Daily Show.
And I think if we exist in a space of less knowing and more learning, maybe we can get somewhere.
Trevor Noah weighs in on the U.S. election. That's still ahead, right here on The World. I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. President-elect Donald Trump. I'm still getting used to those words. I suspect so are you. The vote is leaving aftershocks all over the globe. But for the man who described Mexicans as rapists, the aftershocks are huge south of the border. Just look at Mexico's currency. The peso plunged quickly to a new low, to around 20 pesos to the dollar. The World's Monica Campbell joins us from Mexico City. What kind of reactions are you hearing from Mexicans you've been speaking with today, Monica?
People are heartbroken, very upset. I went out on the street and talked to some people, and two women were standing there having breakfast, and I asked them what they thought, and they, you know, they shook their head and they just said, we can't talk about it right now. I did talk to some people that were having breakfast outside here. One man said, there's racism in the United States, and it's been noticeable, he said, ever since Obama took office. He noted that, you know, many Mexicans have lived in the United States or have family who live in the United States who've experienced discrimination. And he said, you know, this election is holding up a mirror to a lot of Americans, but if you've been an immigrant in the United States, you've witnessed that. You've felt that yourself.
Right. I mean, there are, of course, a lot of unknowns about the actual policies that may emerge in a new Trump administration. What questions are Mexicans asking today?
Well, one of the main questions is whether he's going to make good on his campaign promises. You know, Trump talked about ending NAFTA, a major trade agreement. He talked, of course, about building a wall along the southern border. Is it feasible? What does it mean for Mexico's economy? What does it mean for families who move back and forth across the border? Also, Trump has mentioned making it costlier for people to send remittances or money back home from the United States to their loved ones here in Mexico. Billions of dollars are sent every year by Mexicans working in the United States to their families back in Mexico. That's money used for everything from, you know, shoes for the kids to food. People are wondering, is that going to be hindered or blocked in some way? And of course, we also have, will Trump successfully be able to deport millions of Mexicans? There's a lot of doubt that he'll be able to do that. But what if he can?
There was also that famous cross-border visit Trump made to President Enrique Peña Nieto earlier this year. A lot of people there felt it was not a wise move for Peña Nieto, whose ratings were already in the tank. Has he reacted today to Trump's victory?
He has gone on Twitter and he said that he would work with the president-elect. He has said that, you know, the U.S. and Mexico are friends. It's been a few tweets, nothing much beyond that. I think that a lot of Mexican officials are in shock. Mexicans can't be more disappointed in their president. And now they see that it's a slap in the face. It's an insult to many Mexicans here that millions of Americans voted for a politician who called them, as you said, you know, rapists, called them murderers from the start of his campaign. And now this person is going to become president and we're neighbors. You know, it's going to be a real tough haul.
Is anyone you've spoken with, Monica, embracing the new president-elect?
I haven't talked to anyone who feels remotely optimistic about what's happened, about Trump winning the presidency. In fact, a couple of people I've talked to have said that they don't feel that they should be polite or diplomatic at all about this. That if you are in the United States and you voted for Trump, you basically voted for somebody who has called Mexicans criminals, has horribly insulted them. This is how a lot of Mexicans feel. They can't look past that. So many Mexicans, I mean, one of the men I talked to this morning, he said, you know, what would the United States do without immigrant labor? It would collapse, he said. And he's just shocked at the idea that there's a president now coming on board who is talking about deporting millions of immigrants. And this is something that just seems astounding and completely contrary to the direction that President Obama was going in terms of trying to get immigration reform in place. And this just seems to be going into a completely opposite direction for a lot of people here.
The World's Monica Campbell is the editor of our Global Nation desk. Monica, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Marco.
Many of the millions of immigrants living in the U.S. without legal status came here as children. And in 2012, President Obama issued an executive order giving them the chance to apply for temporary protection against deportation, known as DACA. But during the campaign, Donald Trump said he would get rid of DACA as president. Today, the World's Jasmine Garz reached out to some people who would be affected.
No matter how hard he studied, Oliver Marino knew he could only aspire to a very low-end job.
I was mostly working in restaurants, retail stores, places where you didn't really need a college degree. But because I couldn't get into certain jobs, I couldn't even apply because I didn't have a valid Social Security number.
Marino's parents brought him from Mexico to the U.S. when he was 10 years old. He and his family crossed the border without papers. He's now 27. Under Obama's executive order, he was able to apply for deferred action, or DACA. It didn't give him legal status, but rather a temporary reprieve from deportation, a chance to come out in the open about his status, and a chance to get a better job as a museum educator in South Carolina. But he knew that DACA was vulnerable and that a Trump administration would try to cancel it.
I'm not really surprised that this country chose Donald Trump. Living here in the South, being undocumented, being an immigrant, I've heard some of these comments that I've heard from Donald Trump before. I've experienced some of this xenophobia, some of this hatred.
25-year-old Kelly also has DACA status. She has asked that we do not use her last name. She's worried about the mood brought on by this entire election.
I feel that I'm being disrespected. I'm being disrespected in a way that
I'm the other in terms of not being a what they consider a citizen or somebody that should be in the United States. And I'm also a woman, and I'm a woman of color.
Kelly was brought to the U.S. from Peru when she was a child. She and her parents overstayed their visa. She says DACA gave her a temporary sense of ease, but she's never been sure about the future. And now she's even less so.
So usually I always get asked this question, like, what are your long-term plans? And I always say I don't have any because I don't know what's going to happen. So now it's like even worse. Like, I'm worried. I'm very scared. It's, can you just give me a second? Hold on, I'm sorry. What's going to happen next? If you know, if the program ends, then where do I stand?
Oliver Marino says he's not that scared about his own future. He's more worried about those around him who don't have any legal protection.
People like my mom and my dad, friends that did not qualify for deferred action, and now I think they are in living jeopardy.
Later tonight, he'll be meeting with some of those friends and family to discuss what their options are, if indeed the Trump administration cancels DACA. For The World, I'm Jasmine Garst.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, like so many world leaders, has congratulated Donald Trump on his election victory. But Putin might be happier than most. In his message, he acknowledged that there is currently a crisis in Russian-American relations, a crisis that Putin said he hopes will now be coming to an end. Trump and Putin expressed admiration for each other during the long U.S. election campaign. Charles Maines is in Moscow. So what was the mood in Moscow through the night and now today, Charles?
Well, I think the only word to say is euphoric. Russian elite from Putin on down have been absolutely thrilled with the result of the U.S. election. Today, for example, in the Duma, this is the state parliament here in Russia, when the results were announced that Mr. Trump had triumphed in this election, the lawmakers broke out into applause. The nationalist leader, Vladimir Zhirinovsky, was promising to pour champagne for everybody. We have governors from United Russia, this is Putin's ruling party, saying that, in fact, this is a victory for Russia. So I think it's fair to say that Kremlin loyalists see this as their victory today.
So I suspect that the Duma did not burst into applause when Obama was reelected in 2012. What do Russian parliamentarians expect now from Donald Trump?
Well, they look at this as an opportunity for just a complete relaunch of Russian-U.S. relations. I think they look at this as a chance not only for the Kremlin essentially to weaken sanctions against it over the annexation of Crimea. They look at Mr. Trump perhaps seeing eye to eye with Russia on issues such as NATO's expansion into Eastern Europe, because, of course, that's been an issue of contention with the Obama administration. I think they also see the U.S. and Russia perhaps cooperating more closely on issues such as Syria and the fight against ISIS. So I think overall, there's just a sense this is a real opportunity for Russia. In Russia, the markets went up today because there's a feeling that people are very optimistic that Western sanctions may be lifted and it might be sort of a return to normal.
So Hillary Clinton was portrayed in Russian state media as an anti-Russian warmonger. Putin himself said she has no soul. So today, how's she being portrayed, especially with her peaceful transition concession speech?
Well, I think basically they've forgotten all about her already. It's all about what's coming up ahead now. So I think there's no sympathy, certainly, for Hillary Clinton. And among Kremlin trolls, there's a sense that the witch, you know, the witch is dead. But in terms of the Kremlin elite, this is clearly they're just looking forward at this point.
So state media, one thing. How surprised are your Russian friends?
Well, you know, in a way, I mean, even those who are not, say, fans of Mr. Putin's, I think there's a certain admiration in a strange way for the effectiveness of American democracy and American populist rage. I mean, here's a case where, you know, America defied essentially the elites of the system. And so I think there's a sense that Russia's, you know, they're really asking themselves, could Russians do the same thing in the current system? And the answer is probably not.
So, Charles, when you get right down to it, how much confidence is there really in Moscow that a real reset in relations between Russia and the U.S. is coming with the Trump administration? Because wouldn't that also tip to a reset in all sorts of relations with Syria and Turkey, notably?
Well, they're optimistic. I mean, I think they're, of course, they're counseling that maybe not be sudden changes. And of course, we've had the foreign ministry, for example, step forward and say, look, we'll judge this on a, you know, deal by deal basis. But certainly, you know, this is something where, as we went through this campaign, state media, for example, clearly championed Trump as the candidate, even going so far as to say that if he didn't win, it meant that American democracy was broken and corrupt. So suddenly they got their wish. And I think for now, they're content with celebrating and to see what happens later.
Reporter Charles Maines in Moscow, thank you for the update, man.
Thank you.
Amer Al-Azam is a professor of Middle Eastern history at Shawnee State University in Ohio. We often turn to Amer for questions about the war in Syria. So, Amer, given Donald Trump's cozy attitude toward Vladimir Putin and supporting Putin's plans in Syria, this has got to be a pretty disheartening day for the Syrian opposition, and you're part of it, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And like you quite rightly pointed out, it is a time when we really don't know what's going to happen. Certainly, as far as the relationship between Putin and Trump, it appears that they are, getting along with each other. And as far as Syria is concerned, I anticipate that Trump will try to come to some arrangement with Putin. The price for that will obviously be Aleppo, where Putin will be given a free hand in Aleppo, and this will be a big win for the regime.
Do you see with President Trump a possibility that the war in Syria could somehow come to an end faster than any of us ever would have thought?
I don't know about coming to an end faster, but the trajectory of the war, some of the directions that the war might take will probably change. One of the big issues that will be up on the table is, will Trump continue the nominal, bare minimal support that the Obama administration has provided for the Syrian opposition? Will that cease completely, or will that sort of develop in a new direction? That's number one. Number two, what will the Trump administration relationship with Turkey and with the other regional actors be like? So how will Trump deal with Turkey and Turkey's interests in the region and in Syria? Will he support Turkish aspirations to prevent a Kurdish joint Kurdish canton, for example? How will he deal with the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia and their sort of, if you want, interests in the region? And three, and most importantly, I think, how will he deal with Iran, and how will he deal with Russia? Now, with Russia, he will probably try to work with. But with Iran, it is very unlikely that, given where we know Trump stands on Iran and Iranian issues, it is very unlikely that he will want to deal with them. And more than likely, he would want to somehow be seen to be limiting their influence or their ability to act through their proxies. And now I might, again, have some impact on what we're doing in Iraq as well. And, we have to see what happens there.
Amer, you're Muslim at Shawnee State in Ohio, a state that went for Trump, a man who has had harsh and hateful words for Muslims. How does this day feel to you personally?
I mean, I'm a very secular person, so I qualify the Muslim, but in the mood that we sense in the country as a whole shifting, it is a time for worry. And I have many friends who are actually practicing Muslims, and they are very concerned. Personally, I just don't think there's going to be that much of a change. I think whilst there are concerns, and a lot of people have expressed them, In real terms, will that mean that now I'm going to have to look over my shoulder as I walk down the street in Portsmouth, Ohio? I don't think so. Will I not be able to go and buy things from the store, from my local Kroger store in Athens, Ohio, where I live? No, I don't think so. So in the short and immediate term, I don't think it's going to have a major impact. But I think overall, is there an increased sense of anxiety, an increased sense of fear maybe, or... Yes, there is. And I see it, in many of the people who I know who are Muslim, who are Arab, who are sort of the others, if you want.
Amer Al-Azam, professor of Middle Eastern history at Shawnee State. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Hillary Clinton's run for the White House made history. First woman to become a major party's nominee for U.S. president. I'll be honest, though, we thought we'd be talking to women around the globe today about Clinton becoming the first woman elected president of the United States. Still, we went ahead and asked women in different countries for their reactions today to the actual outcome. We start with Anna Hozanova, a civil rights activist in Ukraine.
Grief. I think that's the best word to describe it. The implications of this presidency are unknown. People just don't know what to expect. And there's a great sense of unknowability. I grew up in the former Soviet Union, and I lived through the collapse of the Soviet Union. And it is really interesting to see how a lot of people hoped that it is possible to change things in an instant. and make things better in an instant. And I've learned that it is much easier to break something and to say that something is not working, let's create something from scratch by changing it immediately. And I would urge caution. The U.S. has such a strong gravitas in the international affairs and the business affairs and the social affairs that any new policies that are being implemented have an enormous unintended consequences to many people around the world. I would like to ask Mr. President to consider very carefully any changes or any new policies that might be implemented as a result.
I'm Katerina Vrana. I'm a comedian and I'm from Greece. I thought that Trump would win. I thought it would be very close, but I thought that he would win because I think that's where everything is pointing towards. Recently, in the last 2 years, the world seems to be electing ridiculous people. So I'm not surprised. I'm not happy with the result, but I'm not surprised. Going on my Facebook friend reactions, most people are very upset because apart from anything else, he is completely inexperienced and he has never been in office before. So he has no idea what he's doing. None. Nothing. My feeling is that he will make so many mistakes so fast that I don't think it's just going to impact women. So I think with women, it's kind of just a step back.
I am Adobe Trisha Mubani. I live in Abuja, the capital city of Nigeria. I'm not completely shocked by this. Of course, we would have, all the newspapers and the polls predicted a completely different outcome. There's more and more people concealing what they think. At a point, it was almost like if you said you were supporting Trump, you would be called an idiot. So I suspect that a lot of Trump supporters simply kept quiet, were just silent about the fact that they would vote Trump and went ahead and did it. The people who were supporting Trump are now feeling more free to say it, to say these things that they were concerned about. Not to say that they were right. I'm not saying they were right and I'm not passing judgment on anybody's opinion. I'm simply saying I'm hearing more honesty in terms of what people really felt. I'm one of those people who believe that there's good in everyone. It's just possible that Trump was just putting up a show. He'll show us a different side.
My name is Susan Cruz. I was born in El Salvador and I live in Washington, D.C. Shock and disappointment. We have to realize that all those folks that voted and made the results happen, they have been there all along and they had been ignored and they were on the fringes. And this is the result of that. I was born in El Salvador. I survived the Civil War. The first time I ever voted in my life was after the war ended. I cherish the right to vote. As an immigrant and as a woman, I can tell you that I hear deep hurt and disappointment in the voices of many people. If we saw the ugly underbelly of racism during the Obama administration, now we're going to see the ugly underbelly of misogyny and sexism. I think, we have to talk about inequality in the United States. We boast as being, the land of the free and so many things, but yet we ignore people. Mr. Trump, choose your administration wisely. One person does not make this country, and hopefully we will all survive this together.
That was Susan Cruz, an immigrant rights advocate from El Salvador. We also heard from Nigerian writer Adobe Trisha Nobani, Greek comedian Katerina Vrana, and Ukrainian civil rights activist Anna Hozanova. Finally today, South African comedian Trevor Noah took over as host of The Daily Show in September of last year. It's been a pretty wild time for America ever since, politically speaking, and Noah's weighed in from his anchor chair. Today he told me that Donald Trump's election victory is a wake-up call for an America that can no longer avoid talking about race, class, and all sorts of thorny issues.
The one thing we can thank Donald Trump for is that these conversations have come to the fore. And it's no longer something that people can deny being discussed because we are in a world where it is very, very real.
So for someone who grew up in South Africa watching lots of American TV dubbed into Xhosa and Zulu, eating American junk food, now hosting this quintessentially American TV satire, what does America mean to you today?
America is not a place for me. It's an idea. You know, it's an idea that I cannot deny influenced my life, you know, whether it was in the way I dressed, even sometimes the way I spoke, the things I wanted to be, the places I wanted to see. You know, the world looks to America, and in essence, America leads the world. And so for me, growing up, it was this magical, fantastical place that you could never go to, but you could always try to emulate.
Your predecessor at The Daily Show expressed some amused outrage that he was leaving the show just as Donald Trump entered the race. Now Trump is the president-elect. I guess Trump becomes your story now. Trevor Noah, what are your plans?
My plans are to experience it with everyone else. I think one of the biggest things I promised myself as soon as it was announced that Trump was president-elect was the fact that I wouldn't lie and say that I know. You know, sometimes I feel like that's part of the problem. Everyone's acting like they know. That's how we got here. The pollsters knew. You know, the pundits knew. The media knows. And then they pivot immediately and now know the next thing. And now they know what's going to happen in Donald Trump's first year. And they know. Nobody knows. And I think if we exist in a space of less knowing and more learning, maybe we can get somewhere. You know, we know what Trump supporters want, but do we? You know, we know what half of the country feels, but do we really? And so I think if anything, my plan is to try to learn more and to try and exist in a space of not knowing, but learning.
Trevor Noah is host of The Daily Show. Really great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Trevor Noah has a new memoir, by the way, Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. We'll hear more from him about that next week. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH, I'm Marco Werman. Deep breaths, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
PRI, Public Radio International.